Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. How are you doing? I'm doing great. Bitcoin is doing good. It's quite a pleasure to be in a high Bitcoin excitement moment, but it's also a weird feeling because I feel like we're going to reach a peak at some point, and I don't know, I'm going to have to, you know, it changes your emotional state. I love the idea of being into it, into Bitcoin, and aping into it, and being at 16K, like, I want to put all of my money into Bitcoin. When you realize that, yeah, one day a peak will happen, and it's going to be time for cashing out. It's sad in a way. It will it will undermine the low intelligence that it was. Like, it was really not a hard decision to get into Bitcoin at 16K, at 7K. But so it needed a very small part of my brain. It needed no cognitive effort. You could be confident that you were in a very good investment. Now I feel like I'm going to have a heartache no matter where I sell. If I sell at 120K, I'm going to be thinking, well, that's pretty low. Maybe it's going to go higher. If I sell at 300K, I'm going to be asking, are we in Weimar, Germany? Are we in a hyperinflationary loop that will lead it to a million and I will regret it? There's kind of no point at which your appetite is satisfied. Barnabé Buteau says, BTC makes you feel like cash is dirty. I don't want to sell. Exactly. So it's as if, as I attain the peak, it's as if you discover that the path was more worthy than the destination. I know it's an often said slogan, but that's exactly how I feel. T has sent a $10 super chat during the night. Thank you so much. He says, hello, Jeff. What do you think about the libertarian strategy of agorism? Also, do you morally object to based libertarians leeching off the state, i.e. legally starving the state through parasitism? The second question I've often answered, I am totally for libertarians to be collecting social welfare. First, because it's in your self-interest. So, you know, it's the fault of the system. If a system is sick, that's not an argument for stopping to pursue your self-interest. You must pursue your self-interest in all systems. Then we can have a societal discussion about which systems lead to the least parasitism. But I'm not going to take on my shoulder the weaknesses of the system we live in. You know, you collect those taxes, you print this money, I will take my share of the pie. And in fact, taking my share of the pie is the way to destroy the system quicker. If you don't slow down these systems, the parasitism remains open to competitors of yours. So you have everyone around you living off social welfare, but you don't because you're a poor libertarian, and out of ideological ground, you refuse to act in your self-interest. Well, that's ridiculous because you're making the situation worse. You're making the social welfare state more viable and more rewarding of non-libertarians. Nonsense. So absolutely drain the state with everything you got. Get that extra tax credit for being a Native American or whatever. Be a lesbian handicapped basketballer if that's what pays. Your first question, what do I believe about agorism? I didn't know the term. I Googled it. Agorism is a free market anarchist political philosophy that believes the ultimate goal as bringing about a society in which all relations between people are voluntary exchanges, a free market. The term comes from the Greek word agora. Agorist theory divides people into two classes, people who make their living through the market and people who make their living by coercing others, called the economic class and political class, respectively. They support a nonviolent overthrow of the second class by the first through peaceful black market and gray market activity known as counter economics. I didn't know about the term, but that's exactly how I feel. That's beautiful. Yes, I believe that the maybe not 100%, but I believe we can make massive improvements in making voluntary societies, societies that are based on a much more voluntary basis than our current societies. And you do this by making the cost of coercing others higher and at some point impossible to do. And I believe that Bitcoin will be a major player in changing the world from the coercive societies of today into the more free societies of tomorrow. Because Bitcoin, in the end, if you don't have the seed keys, you don't have control over the sum of money. And that is extremely important. It's going to cut the possibilities. When you think about, for example, the truckers in Canada that have protested in Ottawa, they quickly got targeted by the Canadian government, their bank account seized. All of their donation money flows from gives and go, controlled by banks and governments. With Bitcoin, it would be hard to pull this. So I think Bitcoin will be a player in bringing about agorism. And yes, I do believe that agorism is a desirable state to pursue. Stripe is a dangerous growing monopoly in the alt tech sector because everyone finds it easy to use Stripe. Stripe indeed is the processor for Super Chat payments on Odyssey, but Keith Woods was commenting a couple of days ago that if Stripe is just going to deplatform everyone right-wing for their Twitter activity, Elon Musk might have to consider an alternative payment processor. Because you have Twitter, Odyssey, they deal with Stripe, and they're like, oh, that saves us a lot of trouble. We just have to send money through this platform, and they deal with all of the problems of connecting to your bank account and everything. But as a result, for me to derive money on Twitter or on Odyssey, I have to have a Stripe account. Now, the problem is that Stripe gets to know the personal details of people, and they can decide we're going to ban Jean-François Gariepy across all platforms. We're going to ban this guy across all platforms. So you have a kind of fake alt tech that is building here, an alt tech without the payment facilities. If you don't have the payment facilities, you have a big problem, which is you're letting the payments be controlled again by a central entity that will again be ideologically targeted by the left when they see it convenient for their electoral goal. John Drake says, think of how well small states that open their doors to Bitcoiners will do. It's a game theory. It's game theory. It's going to happen. Yes, very soon. We will see the world divided in two worlds. People, places that impede on the ability of people to have Bitcoin and places that don't. And the places that don't will be victorious long term. An absolutely disgusting attack. I don't have the video here, but I've seen the video. Black people attacking a white woman. You can see this black girl bumping the head of this woman onto the concrete. This is always the problem with these fights. Clearly, the black community is engaging in these fights with goals of long-term damage. Like, as an honorable European person of morality, you wouldn't kick someone in the head once they're down. You would have made your case that you've won the fight, you go away, and that's fine. But we see constantly how violence is done in the black community, and it's violence that targets long-term damage. And here you could see the girl that had her head bumped into the concrete floor. You could see it totally go into a seizure as a result of the brain damage she was getting. I mean, when you're to the point of causing a seizure by hitting someone in concrete, it's ridiculous. It is a savage, criminal murder attempt. And now the person is in grave condition. We don't know if she's going to die. She's in the hospital, but you just can't. You can't go with your European morality of combat and face these people. It's quite simple. It's not working. It's not working. It's not compatible. You're there trying to get clean shots in. There are five on you, kicking you in the head while you're unconscious and cracking your cranium onto the ground. And as Nick Fuentes was pointing out, this is just the first layer. Suburban says she is dead. Is that is what Twitter said? Well, I've seen claims that she was dead since yesterday, but up to now, the official news have been that she's in grave conditions in the hospital. And as Nick Fuentes was pointing, this is just the first wave. Get ready. The second wave is 60 IQ cannibalism. Today, Matt Walsh, among others, have been covering what's happening in Haiti. Haiti has gotten rid of its white people about a decade or two ago. I think we covered this on the show, the genocide of Haitian white populations, basically pushing them out, making their life so miserable that no white person could stay in Haiti. One or two decades later, what do we find ourselves with? The Haiti social system has crumbled into cannibalism gangs. Even Elon Musk is tweeting about it. Cannibal gangs. I mean, this is it. We carry all this juicy fat and sugar in our blood. We are reserves of, we are balls of energy walking around with our energetic wealth onto our bones. And that's quite appealing for someone who's hungry. Stephen Robinson says, Haiti has one billionaire and he's Jewish. Is he one of these black Israelites? If you want to be a billionaire in Haiti, you better have very, very tall walls and maybe turret guns around your house. Josh Dolany says only Ayn Rand was smart enough to predict that incompetence and an envy for excellence will lead to dystopian social outcomes. Orwell thought we would need total mind control. Huxley thought we would need a permanently drugged populace. But Rand knew all you need is resentment. That is a beautiful statement. I've never really read much of Ayn Rand, but that is very interesting because I always find the dystopian novels too much. They always go too far. And by going too far, they kind of deceive people. They deceive people into not understanding the full extent of the human control that is coming to control us. It's not a bunch of people dressed in Nazi uniforms with SS on the collars here. It's not a bunch of super organized military or Antifa-like teams that are roving the streets and telling people what to do. The true nature of human control is so much more vicious and comes so much more subtle than this, that when you read the dystopian novels and the big systems of control, the huge bureaucracies, it makes you forget that even before these huge bureaucracies would show, there's the everyday bureaucracy that's taking over. it's all a bunch of people trying to do good and being jealous. That's it. That's all you need. And I didn't know that Ayn Rand had written on this, but it's very important. Congratulations, guys of the internet. You have harassed Emil Kierkegaard to the point where he will read The Revolutionary Phenotype. Now, I'm not for harassment. I believe that we always have to give a chance to someone to read The Revolutionary Phenotype willfully. But then, if they don't... The thing is, in the end, we have people claiming all sorts of fallacious reasons for why not to read The Revolutionary Phenotype that range from, well, someone told me it wasn't good, to, well, his fans are neurotics, and now he says that I have narcissistic personality disorder. I don't care about any of this. I really care about people reading The Revolutionary Phenotype to understand the theory of phenotypic revolutions. I really care about, in my lifetime, seeing people's brain be illuminated by understanding. That's what I care about. But if I come to you and I say, hey, you should read this book, it's totally within your field, it's going to update you on some things you seem to think that I think are wrong, you should definitely read this book. It's definitely relevant to you. And my fans are coming to him and they say the same. His reaction to some of my fans telling him about the book was, someone told him, you are outdated in biology if you don't read TRP. Which I think is correct. You are just not a man of your time in biology if you don't know about The Revolutionary Phenotype. And he answered to this, which is, it's not a personal attack. It's just saying, hey, you're missing some knowledge here. Go for it. That's interesting knowledge. He answered to this kind of delusional take from his fans is one of the reasons I don't read it. Now, the problem with this is it's not only fallacious. It doesn't matter. The truth of the theory of phenotypic revolution is not dependent on the degree of hassleness of my fan base. It really doesn't matter. They could be total assholes and it could still be true. But more importantly, it's a fallacy and also it's a self-filter out of anything intelligent. Because what's the first thing that someone with an important theory will come out and say? Hey, I have an important theory. Now, if you say, I'm not ever going to read a book by someone who claims he has an important theory, then you're never going to read an important theory at all because you're going to miss them all. So yesterday I pointed to his tweet and I said, look, that is not reasonable. Grow up. I said, you grow up. Brett Weinstein, grow up. Stop talking about Nazis and oh, his crowd and blah, blah, blah. Read the fucking book and get done with it. And he considered this an attack. He says, and the thing is, he answered to this, he answered another fallacy. He came and said, well, I have friends who have read the book and I respect them and they said it was bad. And then the people who tell me it's good are on Twitter. So who am I going to listen to? My friends, of course. Holy shit. A second layer of fallacy. So when I saw that he was that determined into continuing in his fallacious route, I blocked him. Now, Emil Kierkegaard is this guy who is controversial because he's a friend of Dutton. He's doing research on IQ and race. And he's one of those based scientists, basically, who constantly publish race and IQ papers. And very often in those specialized magazines that accept this kind of controversial research. I don't have much of a position on the guy. It's small science, you know, it's good. It's good to know these things. But the revolutionary phenotype is in another category. The revolutionary phenotype is big science. It's millions of years revolution level of science, okay? It changes the world. So I blocked him because if you're telling me that friends have told you a theory is bad and therefore you refuse to read it yourself when it's a 140-page book, literally it takes an afternoon to read the revolutionary phenotype, I said, I'm blocking this fake intellectual. And somehow this block is what, which is another fallacious reason, but it's what led to his reversal. Since JFG apparently decided to block me, even though he was the one attacking me, I will take the bait and read that book since it's so short. You know what? I just don't care anymore. Emil Kierkegaard being the fish that says, fuck it. I know it's a hook. I'm just going to bite it. Yeah, it's a hook, Emil. It's a hook toward knowledge. It's a hook toward an interesting theory that shows a meta-cycle of evolution that counters certain views you could have by believing only in the selfish gene cycle of evolution. It's a counter-cycle. It's fascinating. It explains why memes aren't replicators. It explains why memes aren't a birthing life form. It explains why genetic modifications are dangerous. And it explains the evolutionary structure of viruses, how life emerged on Earth, and how we ended up with three layers of genetic codes. If that isn't interesting to you, who is an evolutionary thinker, I'll reimburse the price of the book. Dino Logovic says, the people who come here disgust me. Okay, but you're here every day. John Drake says, make your own judgment, read it down your damn self. Yeah, so in the end, it's a victory for the trolls of the internet. And I have to say, I admire the job that you guys have done on Twitter with Emil Kierkegaard, because he's out there claiming that you went too rough with him. I'm reading through your tweets to him. And yes, you go rough with him, but ideologically rough. You're not attacking him personally, but you're like, hey, this is fallacious. Hey, we don't trust surveys to determine if a theory is true. Hey, we expect more from you, Emil. We expect you to go through the argument and tell us why it's wrong. So you guys have been extremely rational in this, and although he's trying to paint himself as a victim of the harassment of my crowd, oh my god, beta cock Emil Kierkegaard, get some balls. What I've read is a very honest engagement with you, and the fact that you are deciding to read The Revolutionary Phenotype tells me that you have been convinced by those reasonable arguments. Whether it's conscious or unconsciously, you admit the truth. So I've decided to put the face of Emil Kierkegaard onto the footballer who kneeled, what's his name? Kasper Sky, whatever, the black footballer who started the whole kneeling thing and who I think never made it to the NFL, ended up just being a leftist star of some kind. Kaepernick. So I think that Emil Kierkegaard is preparing to kneel to the truth of the revolutionary phenotype in the same way that he has already kneeled to the necessity of reading it. It all started with this tweet, which I disagree with, okay? This accent needs to be illegal and women should be banned from doing manual labor like this. There is nothing feminine about American women. American women are literally men. And now this person has answered, but let's look at the original video that led to the big mimetic reaction.
Good morning, y'all. Quick update on the house, because I've been pretty terrible about giving y'all these. We took a little break for noodling season and to put out boxes. Now that it's dried in, we can do it at our own pace. But here she is. We're going to stain all that wood a darker brown, and the shutters when we get that on. We'll have handrails, of course. There's the carport over there. Quick run through. All these trusses are going to be exposed, and we're going to have old tin in the ceiling. Got Daddy and Paul up there working on a wall we're going to put up for the upstairs office. And we got Def Leppard playing in the background, of course. Back porch, beautiful view. And then the walkway to the carport. I'll try to be better about these. But you can also use my code HANNAH25 for 25% off We the People Holster.
So this started a whole discussion on tomboy, American, Southern accent woman. But the thing is, this doesn't qualify as a tomboy to me. I think it doesn't fully represent the reality of a tomboy. She looks beautiful, you know. A tomboy is not this in my view. Now, she may be behaving a little bit masculine with the... But it's not so masculine. It's really just a female from a kind of hillbilly type of raising. She talks about her father and her father introducing her to building. But we're just talking about a woman going around a construction site. And by the way, it's a man who's doing the construction. I don't know to which extent she makes video about building, but she's merely presenting the construction here. As far as I can see from the video, it's a man nailing those pillars and carrying those pillars. So I think there was exaggeration from the beginning in this tweet that says this accent needs to be illegal and women should be banned from doing manual labor like this. I think it's an example of a over backlash. Backlash that goes too far against the leftist desire to abolish the distinction between the sexes. Because yes, masculine behaving woman is a huge problem in society. But that is not a masculine behaving woman. That is a woman who is in an environment of masculinity, but she's not trying to abolish the features of her body that look feminine. She's not trying to look like a guy. She's not behaving like a guy. The only thing that she has is an accent that is extremely, you know, Southern and maybe kind of builder type of culture. But then she says she was raised by her father you know, has learned about all this building stuff from her father. So here's what she has to say in reaction to the mimetic rise about her video.
Good morning, y'all. I don't have a Twitter. I did at one point, but my account got removed for whatever reason, and I just hadn't got around to making another account. But apparently I'm trending on Twitter right now because some girl, hey Merle, some girl said that my accent should be illegal. Women shouldn't do manual labor. What else did she say? American women are basically men. And she just said that I was not feminine. Ooh. And I would tell y'all this girl's name, but I can't remember it because I don't have a clue who she is. So that should tell you how relevant this person is. But I just think it's hilarious because I grew up as the weird kid in high school who hunted and fished too much, because back then it wasn't cool for women to hunt or fish or the whole country lifestyle. And I'm so proud of all the women in the outdoors now who are making that more cool or popular. So proud of us. I think we're doing great. But I've been helping Dad build houses since I was 15. When I was a senior in high school, I taught kids how to weld.
Okay, so she ends up saying saying all sorts of things about we should be open to women doing stuff. I don't care. I think that she has introduced in her speech a little bit of leftist ways of talking. But in the end, the fact that these women exist is not a problem. They are not part of the fight against sex that the left is doing. They are just women who truly are feminine, but they converge toward male interest and fishing. That's okay. It's the country lifestyle from her perspective. And to me, that doesn't even qualify as a tomboy yet. For a tomboy, you need to have a woman who adopts the features of the male looks. And that's not what she's doing. DK Shadow says, intrasexual competition. Yes. Now, I mean, she has the language features of a truly isolated life. I mean, to develop that deep of an accent, you need to really have been raised in the country. But that's okay. That's fine that it exists. How shadowy network of NGOs supply mega corporations with migrants to exploit cheap labor. All the new jobs since 2018 have gone to foreign-born workers because you can be an illegal immigrant in deportation proceedings, not to mention anyone seeking asylum, and get authorization to work in the U.S. for up to 5 years, no questions asked. So basically, you know, people like me, white people, I'm all nervous about my trip, which is just a tourist trip in the U.S., you know, but I don't want to log on a computer where I could be perceived as making work. I want to respect all of the rules of immigration of the U.S., but basically, they don't care. There's no immigration rules to the U.S. They are there for the looks, for white people, and for people like me who are so self-conscious about respecting the law that, oh my God, I need to know all of the rules and everything I don't want to do during my trip. But meanwhile, people can enter the U.S. illegally and work. They really don't care. It's a form of importation of a slave labor kind of low-level workforce that the companies sometimes need, but it's also tiresome. We should have let these companies die. If you cannot produce stuff that you can sell high enough to pay enough your workers, then maybe you don't deserve to exist. Maybe your product goes off the market, or you raise your prices and you pay your workers correctly. So Ariel Suarez says, Hannah Baron is back on Twitter. She just confirmed earlier today. So is that the lady with the accent? I wouldn't be surprised that she would come back on Twitter. That's the right moment when you get this kind of a mimetic story around you. Stephen Robinson says, I entered America illegally once. I stayed for 2 years drinking beer and harassing the public. Wow, bro. Why were you harassing the public? Why be an asshole to the country that was so welcoming to you? E. Michael Jones has an analysis on Oppenheimer. He says, Christopher Nolan used Oppenheimer to present a subtle critique of Jewish warmongering, Jewish vengeance, and Jewish lack of loyalty to the country which gave them asylum from the Nazis. Within weeks of arriving here, Jewish scientists started passing nuclear secrets to the Soviet Union. Read Oppenheimer in Culture Wars for the details. That is correct. That is absolutely correct. I think Christopher Nolan tried to do what he thought was maybe a critique, but in the end, it is so soft and so subscribing to the Jewish interpretation of these events that I think it doesn't qualify as harsh enough of a critique to pass as such. So I said, this analysis is correct. The critique, however, was way too subtle. And Keith Woods has added, I'm also not sure it was even intentional. Yes, totally. I think that's correct. It's actually hard to know if Christopher Nolan wanted to criticize the Jews or wanted to praise them or just wanted to tell their story objectively. It's really hard to know what he tried to do because there are parts of this movie where you're like, oh, okay, it's kind of based to show, hey, much of America's involvement in World War II was ultimately a bunch of Jews negotiating with a bunch of Jews of other nations and ganging up on Germany. Okay, and yes, much of the advancements in physics was a bunch of Jews wanting revenge against Germany and not getting it. But the fact that the movie then goes into presenting this as, oh my God, the poor Jews, they're not going to get to blow up Germans with their own bomb. The fact that the movie subscribed to this kind of taking the Jews in pity air because they couldn't get the full pleasure of seeing their invention burn the race that they wanted to burn, that makes me step back and say, "What? Wait a minute. Is Christopher Nolan even attempting a critique here? Or is he attempting a praise, but because I look at it through a critical lens, I see a critique?" Because the idea that that America should have thrown the nuclear bomb onto Germany is absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous that a bunch of Christians in America, partly stemming genetically from the German people, should have shot back into Germany with nuclear weapons. And yet the movie kind of tells you that, oh, this was a great point of disappointment, that we have basically fooled the Jews into giving us their clever ideas, but we used it against Japan, which was not the intended target. So it's a very on-the-fence movie, which is why I couldn't like it as much as Barbie. The Barbie, to me, was the clear winner of the Barbie Oppenheimer openings, simply because Barbie is so much clearer about what it says. Cosmic Nut says they wanted revenge on Germans, so they dropped it on Japan. Well, exactly. But that, according to the movie, wasn't taken well by the Jews. It was like, oh, I'm so sad to hear that your bomb will not serve the purpose of killing white people. I'm so sorry. That is kind of a message in the movie. And then the end of the movie is all about the bureaucratic oppression of Oppenheimer and elevates him as a kind of martyr of a Christian white American review of his work. And it's, I don't know, man. Are you so entitled that you were entitled to come into a country, control who they are at war with, control who they genocide, with which bomb they do it, and even who you leak secrets to, so that they can get to other parts of your international network? Are you that entitled that I should be crying about the Jews in this freaking movie? It's an uncomfortable movie for this reason, that I don't know what Christopher Nolan is trying to do. Cosmic Nut says, Japan was going nuts and there were kamikazes. I was thinking about kamikazes yesterday. I was thinking, everyone is a kamikaze. Everyone is dying with their last breath. Everyone is trying to shoot the last bullet. Everyone is trying to use their last fuel to crash into whatever. Everyone is a kamikaze. The fact that we send adults and we keep a generation of youth to repopulate our nations is kamikaze in and of itself. We basically send our fathers and our grandfathers to go defend the homeland traditionally because they have nothing to lose, basically. Every male is a kamikaze. And I was seeing them stack Ukrainian young people who are trying to flee the imposed recruitment of Zelensky's martial law. And they are kamikazes too. They are kamikazes self-sacrificing or being forced to self-sacrifice for whoever will occupy Ukraine after they're dead. Cosmic Nut says, it was a big honor to be a kamikaze in Japan. Sure, I guess. Just like we honor our soldiers who have fallen during wars, we do the same. So I was asking myself, is this whole kamikaze thing part of the whole psyop that war is? Is it a Japanese psyop? Is it an American psyop to dehumanize the Japanese fighter? Because in the end, that's what we would expect any soldier to do, right? In whatever situation you are, if you know your life is done, at least try to use it in a way that advances your side, in a way that tries to kill the enemy more. We're all kamikazes. Andrew Tarbar reports that he was banned from Kraken. He hadn't used this account in 7 years, but he's banned because the ADL said so. Man, those are scary emails. Kraken doesn't matter because it's just a ridiculous exchange out there. But it sucks that they are going with the whole censorship thing. Hello, Andrew. We regret to inform you that we have closed your Kraken account. For security reasons, we are unable to provide you the reason why. You will be unable to open another account and we can't discuss this matter further. Why the whole secrecy? Well, why we can't tell you why we do it. That's a security risk. It looks more like you don't have good reasons. And it looks more like you are following the orders and you don't want to reveal where these orders are coming from. Thaïs Descuffon is a French beautiful woman. Although my girlfriend is truly occupying all of my dreams at all moments, I have to say that Thaïs Descuffon is one of these beautiful women rising on social media. She says, women are easily miserable when they are celibate. They support solitude much, much less than men can. They say that they don't need a man to be happy. It's false. Yeah, you should definitely follow this girl. She's making short videos about right-wing thought and conservative stuff, and she's a French person. I see that she follows me on Twitter. That's great. She's a rising star of the French right or alt-right, if you will. Ersh is probably talking to other girls. Let's see what he's doing on his phone.
Which one's the best crypto asset? Bitcoin's the best crypto asset. What's the second best? There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset. There's a crypto asset. It's called Bitcoin, right? What's the second best? There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset. There's a crypto asset. It's called Bitcoin, right?
I love the memes that are emerging from Michael Saylor. This they have this video, this clip of him where he says, there is no second best crypto asset. And they put this everywhere. It's so beautiful. Churchman says she will never say anything new. Sorry. It's what often happens with French, female right-wing commentary. They often just repeat. I don't know if she will come up with anything new. Probably not, but she will probably just give a beautiful female rap to already existing ideas, which is not terrible. You know, it's sometimes it's what's needed to attract a bunch of new people to those ideas. Barnaby Bruto says BTC can go to zero. The memes makes us rich already. We have here Canadian meteorologist, autistic savant. What's his name? Frankie McDonald. Frankie McDonald declaring the Bitcoin rise of today. This guy makes millions of views just being, just yelling Bitcoin. It's wonderful. I like that there is place on the internet for a guy like this. In cable TV, you don't have a Frankie McDonald. The guy seems kind of retarded to some extent, but he's just yelling Bitcoin and people love it. So people consume his content. He also does predictions of earthquakes sometimes, and sometimes he gets it right. His predictions of earthquakes are always of the form, earthquake will be coming February 17th to 25th, 2024, earthquake possibility elevated. I don't know, how does he come up with this stuff? Is he actually doing research, or is he just super talented, or he gets some divine inspiration? I don't know how Frankie McDonald gets to his content, but it works. People love it. Transgender golfer booted after women's pro tour adopts a biological at birth rose. Effective immediately. I have been removed, banned from the next three tournaments that I already signed up for and been approved to play. The message came after she was removed from the next women's pro tour, who has now announced that participants must be a biological female at birth to participate in its events. I hope that this becomes a trend, because no one wants to watch this. No one wants to watch a bunch of women being outcompeted by a man. The woman's husband died in the war in Ukraine, so she and his brother came to visit his grave. And they kidnapped the brother to send him to the front line to die too. So this brother has just lost his brother to the war. But they had baited the cemetery. They knew that he was coming, so they ambushed him and take him to the front line so he can die too. Unbelievable, this waste of life happening in Ukraine. It's an absolute scandal. Financial Times on Bitcoin. It is extremely unusual for a bubble to burst and then recover to reach new heights so quickly, and suggests that something real and sustainable is going on. This is not a bubble. This is an adoption curve. I don't know of any other financial instrument that is so regular. Bull run, halvening, look, this is a fucking cycle. And it means that if you're not rich in your lifetime, you're stupid. This is a cycle. Yeah. It's as easy as buy here, sell here. Okay? Satoshi made it the easiest thing in the fucking world. Buy here, sell here. Buy here, sell here. Kind of frustrating that this is happening right in front of our eyes at such a slow pace. And yet you have people convinced Bitcoin is a scam, or oh, it's going to drop from 79K this time. This time we're not going to peak higher. It's been happening 4 times. And the 4 times there were people like you thinking it's a fraud, thinking it's not going to do it. And it did it again. So what do you think will happen now? John Drake says, look at BTC's chart next to the tulip bubbles. Not the same in the least. Yeah, definitely not. The CEO of Bitcoin has had some words to say. The journalists were asking, what about the rising demand for Bitcoin? Despite the unprecedentedly rising demand, Bitcoin CEO has confirmed to halve production in the coming weeks. Here you can see Satoshi Nakamoto stopping the journalist, saying, we don't care, halving soon. For those who are not used to Bitcoin, of course, this is a joke. There's no Bitcoin CEO. The halving will happen no matter what. It's programmed. It's already in the software. No one has to make the decision. The halving is happening. It's coming. A French TV host totally misunderstanding Bitcoin. She claims that the halving will cut the price in half to stimulate demand. And so they put these people on mainstream media in France. They don't know what they're talking about. They're just reading what's on their paper.
Exceptionnel pour plusieurs raisons. Et d'abord parce que on touche un plus haut historique et aussi parce que ce plus haut, il atteint, il intervient quelques semaines avant le halving qui, je crois, est prévu mi-avril. Le halving, on le rappelle, hein, c'est le fait de diviser par deux la valeur du Bitcoin pour, là encore, stimuler la demande. Donc, nouveau record qu'on n'attendait pas sur le Bitcoin. On attend surtout le retour d'Amaury et de Guillaume pour les 100 000.
Voilà, et a priori, ce sera le 19 avril, le halving se produit tous les 210 000 blocs. On poursuit ce...
So she's saying the halving will cut the price in half to stimulate demand. What the halving does is it cuts the reward in half to reduce offer, to reduce supply. Dino Logovic says if they keep halving it, it will eventually disappear. It's a scam. Well, it's very long in the future, but there is a point at which there are no more halvings. But that's in like 2060, 2080, 2100. I don't know, but it's far into the future. Here's what's in Biden's reckless $7.3 trillion budget, and here's how you will pay for it. The Biden administration has released a proposed budget that would boost federal spending to $7.3 trillion next fiscal year. To pay for it, they plan to raise taxes on the wealthy and large corporations. Do you understand what's about to happen to Bitcoin? You may not trust Bitcoin if you're a billionaire right now in the US, but you're gonna have to trust it. Because if you're a billionaire in the US, you're about to be targeted by the American government. They will drain your wealth. You think you know how to play the game because you've been winning the game before. But the game of the future is let's drain rich people out. And the only way you can protect against this is to have money in an unseizable form. And the only money in an unseizable form like this will have to be crypto, Bitcoin, something like this. anything that you keep that's registrable, that's acknowledgeable, you have to have basically the capacity to deny that it's even your money. You have to have the possibility, as Michael Saylor pointed out, to say, I lost them in a boat accident. Cosmic Nut says, wealthy and corps will not pay more taxes. Biden is full of shit. Yeah, I think they're getting squeezed to the maximum already. So I think they must be starting to study the Elizabeth Warren solution of not even taxing income, but taxing wealth as a whole. But man, you can't tax wealth that way. You're going to be a leech to anyone trying to accumulate money, and the capitals will just flow out into the crypto sphere, and people are going to say, oh no, those aren't my Bitcoin. They're just Bitcoin. They're there. They're not mine. This is a picture that represents when you've been through many Bitcoin bull markets and now you're getting into this one. I love the attitude of this guy. That is pretty much how I feel in this Bitcoin market. Especially with my position, people are writing to me worrying, Jeff, is it the time to sell? And I'm like, no, just stay in the ride, bro. No, it's not the right time to sell. Of course, no. Here we have a rapper who's asked, do you like living among black people?
No, I was just going to ask, do you feel safe around black people?
No. No, I don't.
And do you feel safe around white people?
Yes, I feel very safe around white people. I feel very safe around white people.
You ain't got to explain that. That's some wild shit, but I hear you.
Yeah. I'm comfortable when I'm around white people. I'm alert when I'm around black people.
That's crazy.
I'm alert and I'm on edge because I know it's going to be a problem.
But black people show you the most love, though. Let's say that.
No.
Damn.
Nah, black people don't show. Black people show the most hate.
Yeah.
Because they hate the love. And they love the hate.
No,
all right, well, Charles Garrity says only blacks can be honest about blacks. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of white people thinking like him, but it is not allowed in polite conversation. Today, Bitcoin has went so high that it has surpassed silver to become the 8th largest asset in the world. So MB14 with your silver, you're getting outcompeted by Bitcoin. All of the Bitcoin in the world is now worth more than all the silver in the world. And it's a matter of time before eventually gold will be outcompeted, and eventually Bitcoin will be in its own asset class. It will be incomparable, the wealth that will be counted into Bitcoin, to any category of any other asset. That is where we're headed. That is the beauty of true ownership and true encryption. And oh my God, am I proud of this. I'm proud that it's happening. We are changing the financial world. We are disempowering governments. And we are disempowering empires, really. It's a more peaceful world that we can be confident in is coming and will be delivered by Bitcoin. Trump praised Hitler for doing some good things, rebuilding the German economy. Former Chief of Staff John Kelly claims. He also reportedly expressed envy at the level of loyalty the German dictator commanded, asking why his generals weren't more loyal. Well, you know, they're trying all of these disloyal past employees or past staff of Donald Trump. They are all part of the machine, and they will all try to get their little dirty smears every week to try to ruin the reputation of Trump. But I think it's not going to work. I think people have grown out of, oh my God, Trump is Hitler. I think people are so tired of it, it might actually advantage him at this point. People are going to start asking, well, is it true? Is it true that Hitler has rebuilt the German economy? Is it true that Hitler had a technique to ensure the loyalty of his generals? Because clearly Trump would benefit from this, but I'm not sure he's prepared for knowing what he would have to do. Relentless, Ukraine here. You can see the work of the Russians against the Ukrainians. Here, a drone is observing Ukraine soldiers getting into a building. So you can see they're carrying stuff into this building. They're taking positions. And so once they have this video confirmation that this building has become part of a military team, minutes later, they order a missile strike. Boom. The end of these soldiers. That is war today. That is the kind of people being sent by the Ukraine side to the front line just to die. It's ridiculous. It's useless. You are drone fodder at this point. It's not even cannon fodder. At least the cannon, you know, it's hard to aim. But at this point, you have a drone. It has a laser. It has GPS. It knows where you are. It has documented you entering the place, so you can't argue it's a residential building. So boom, they shoot right at the, missile or artillery. I don't know, but they have the techniques to adjust these shootings to the precision of a meter, and so you're gonna get exploded if you get caught by the. By the recruiters. At this point, it's more kidnappers than recruiters. That is it for today, boys. Thank you for giving me 2 days of break in the last 2 days. I had some cleaning to do. I still have some more cleaning to do tonight. I'm really rearranging the house and for adjustments of life and for adjustments of the house to the needs of my girlfriend. And so it's all very good, very positive, but I do have a lot of work to reorganize the house, and I will continue this tonight. That is it for tonight, boys. Much love, and I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you.